Mic check. Mic check.
Welcome again, Titans fans, to another episode of MTM Radio. Thanks again for joining us. As I'm sure everybody is aware, we had a trade today. So I got my co-host and dear friend August West on the line to talk about it, and I'm sure we'll beat it into the ground, won't we, August?
Absolutely, absolutely. We had to hurry up and record this one this evening before Dan became available, because I'm sure it would just be about an hour of "I told you so" coming from him. Before we get jumping on that,
probably playing the lottery.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. He pretty much did hit the lottery on that one.
But how have I been doing? I've been doing really good. I appreciate you guys covering for me when I had to cut out during the last episode. But it's super nice to have, like, real football to look forward to try to digest our game with the Chargers and all the noise that's come around from it. And us to actually be coming off a win, even though it's a meaningless one, it's made this week a whole lot easier. How about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say the Titans win on Saturday, as meaningless as it was, at least had a little bit of meaning for all of us, for all the reasons we talked about last episode. That's made at least the past few days a little better. I've noticed Titans fans getting a little more excited, especially when it comes to the running back duo. And, man, we'll just jump right into it. I got to say, my text started blowing up. Twitter feed started blowing up everything this morning with the news breaking that the Tennessee Titans traded their second pick. He was second round pick for us, last season. Rough, promising wide receiver, Dorial Green Beckham, had a couple of 100-yard receiving games last year. Really seemed to oddly kind of turn it on when Mike Mularkey became the head coach, but he is now gone. Sent to Philadelphia, straight up one-on-one trade for backup guard / tackle Kelly. That is going to add to our offensive line depth a little bit, and we'll kind of get into some background on him. But I mean, what did you think as far as value of the trade? I guess we'll start there. DGB for Dennis Kelly, straight up.
My gut instinct and my feeling at first, August, was that the Eagles got probably better value out of the trade, because Dennis Kelly is, I think, fourth or fifth year in the league, and he's kind of he's probably a career backup, whereas DGB has the potential to eventually become a starter. But that being said, I do kind of see the rationale in trading them. Because as much as everybody was enamored with DGB, it hadn't translated onto the field yet. So we pretty much traded our fifth or sixth wide receiver for a swing tackle. When you look at it in those terms, I think it's a little more palatable. And there's a real chance that DGB never gets it. And it could be that he gets it in 2 years or whatever. And I really think that they want us to be a rhythm and timing offense, not really chuck it up to your playmaker and let him do it. I think they want everything to be on schedule. When you got a running team and you're going to be focused on the run, you want to be unmanageable down and distance for passing, and you need everybody exactly where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there, and DGB still had a ways to go.
See, I don't think it has anything to do with necessarily his ability, his career arc, all of that stuff. I think this would be, I mean, to me, it immediately smacked of a move that was sending a message. I'm going to forget the name of the awesome listener and Twitter follower. Man, if I guess that, I'm just going to get it wrong. But posted one of the guys that listens to the show all the time posted a great piece that Jarrell Casey had. I guess a paragraph quote that he had given several years back about how the Tennessee Titans have kind of become a team where guys weren't afraid for their job, where guys were a little too comfortable. And even though you've had people try and come in here and stir that up just a little bit, you know, that comfort level sort of set there. Well, nobody should feel very comfortable right now. I mean, DGV showed a lot of promise last year. He had, in my opinion, a really good rookie season for a wide receiver, especially one who had taken all that time off football or been forced to take all that time off for football. But, you know, he comes in out of shape. He comes in with the wrong attitude. He's inconsistent in dropping balls. I mean, he went from, you know, probably second or third on the depth chart by the end of the season to in the absolute doghouse this offseason. Made no measures, no real ability to move his way up that chart. And, look, I think it was just a straight-up kind of attitude of, look, you might be a good player, but you're not a Titan. You're not our kind of guy. You know, you're not the kind of guys that we want to bring in, and you're not the kind of guy that that we're going to rely on and invest in and take snaps away from guys that we think are a little more dedicated to this team and to winning games, even if they can't run as fast or jump as high. They do all the other things that we think are going to make them and us more successful. One of the other things that popped in my mind, and I'd like to know if you agree with this, they had to have talked to Mariota before this trade, right? I mean, to get, like, hey, look, you've been around some head cases in Oregon. This is your team. This is your franchise. We can, you know, we kind of brought you in and talked to you about what we're going to do with the draft and free agency and all that sort of stuff. Do you think DGB is worth the headache? And I got to believe that Mariota told him no.
You know, I don't know. I didn't even think of it from that angle, August. It wouldn't surprise me either way, whether they spoke with him or not. When I first seen that it was with the Eagles, my first thought, well, when I first seen that we got an offensive lineman from the Eagles, my first thought was, what did they ask DeMarco Murray? You know, they say, we're trying to get a backup offensive lineman from the Eagles who is about what we're trying to be about? Now, as far as Mario, I don't know. I would have to, honestly, I would lean towards them not asking Mariota, and if they did, him not having a bad thing to say about DGB. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy yet.
I don't think it's anything duplicitous, but, I mean, I think a lot of people that have worked in an office in a kind of culture environment, especially if you got a good relationship with management, have been kind of pulled in and asked at one point, like, look, what's the real deal with this guy? And look, I think Mariota's the guy you got to ask about it because he's going to make Mariota look worse than just about anybody else. You know, it's going to be Mariota's passes that he's dropping. It's going to be his drives that DGB is ending. But it could also be, you know, his touchdown passes he's catching and his highlights that he's making. So that's what leads me to believe that they might have asked about him. I don't think that's the final choice, but it's certainly a voice in the conversation, a conversation that absolutely had to include Amy Adams Strunk, you know, John Robinson, Malarkey, Robitsky, you know, his entire position group all the way up to the ownership had to kind of be on board with this move. And I don't think they'd make it if they didn't believe that it honestly would be a healthy move for the locker room. Because, you know, you don't have to be bench pressing in your driveway yelling no comment or next question at reporters like Terrell Owens to make a stink and to be a locker room cancer. You know, you don't have to do things that fans see and that everybody else sees to kind of turn off the guys that you're in there with. And you don't make a move like this, in my opinion, unless he's been doing some of those things and maybe they just haven't exactly gotten out. So they're definitely hoping that this move is kind of addition by subtraction. And it's probably also made a lot easier by the fact that we've had Tajay Sharpe come in and really surprise the coaches. Andre Johnson looks like he's going to be a little better fit than maybe we were thinking.
I think that was part of – well, there's a couple things here as the puzzle gets put together with the trade. First, Tajay Sharpe, I think, absolutely made DGB expendable. Because DGB was starting as our X receiver for a while, and towards the end of last year. Now, us signing Rishard Matthews, I thought, was more about getting a more reliable, productive player to put on the other side formation to play opposite with DGB and then put Kendall in the slot. Tajay Sharpe has been really everything the coaches wanted and more is my understanding of it. So then all of a sudden, they know Rishard Matthews is more ready to play today than DGB. DGB's not going to be somebody in the slot. He's not a good enough route runner for a position like that, really. And his size might like, well, Larry Fitzgerald's kind of changing our thought process on who can play the slot, but DGB wasn't going to overturn him there. And then Tajay Sharp starting on the other side of the outside. So then all of a sudden your two is your four. And then I think that they, after, because we signed Andre Johnson, what, after two or three practices, I think they saw right then that DGB's probably not going to be somebody here long enough. And it could be just that, kind of like what you're saying, maybe he's not a problem now. I want to, that he wasn't turning into a malcontent, but it seemed like that he didn't get motivated by losing the starting position, and he may have been a guy that was just expecting that to get handed to him, and to your point earlier,
yep,
we're not going to play that. You know, to me, it seemed like the Patriots move. You know, that was the feeling I got.
Maybe he wasn't that much of a malcontent until Tajay Sharp jumped him on the depth chart, and we signed Andre Johnson. And he came in out of shape, and there have been, you know, kind of grumblings about him coming from the coaching staff. That he might not have reacted well to that. And, I mean, look, if you can't take the heat, they got other places they want to improve this roster. And DGB, see you later, man. I'm sorry. He might have a good long career path, but if they don't think this is a place for him, I'm more than willing for them to make that move than end up sticking with a guy. I mean, there's every chance in the world he's just a taller Damian Williams, you know, who is a known malcontent now that he's gone, but didn't really make a bunch of hubbub in the media, and is one of the guys that's looked at as indicative of the poor locker room culture, and who never cashed in on his abilities.
I also think that another factor into this is I don't know if Patassi makes this roster, because I think if he was anywhere near capable as a backup or swing or anything like that, then they're probably holding on to a guy like DGB and thinking, well, let's roll the dice and keep him down the depth chart and see if we can get something out of him next year or the year after, because he's on a 4-year contract for peanuts, you know. But I think that it's going to be likely that last year's second round and third round pick are not going to be on our final 53. And that's a frustrating thing.
Well, no. I mean, that would also fit sort of the redefinition of the prototypical offensive lineman for this team. You know, when Wisenhunt was here, you know, Putasi might have fitted a little more as far as being a more fit sort of athletic guy. You know, Conklin, not the greatest athlete in the world. He's a mauler. You know, they want Lawan to be more of a mauler. The reason Quentin Spain has got that left guard spot on lockdown so far is because he's a big-bodied mauler. That's what Byron Bell was. That's what they signed Ben Jones to be. And, you know, that's a pretty decent transition into, you know, kind of what we know about Dennis Kelly and what he's going to bring to the team. So let me go on a slight diatribe / recitation of facts here to get everybody kind of caught up to speed on who Dennis Kelly is, the newest Tennessee Titans offensive lineman. So, he is 6'8", 321 pounds. Needless to say, he's a big old boy. Grew up in Chicago, played 4 years, started 4 years at left tackle at Purdue. Was a co-captain, I think, his last several seasons with Purdue, but I know definitely his senior season. And there was a fifth-round pick back in 2012 for Andy Reid. Okay, you got to remember, this is Andy Reid's last draft with the Eagles. That was a much more power-oriented scheme. He started, actually, 10 games at various positions his rookie season with Andy Reid. Now, interesting note, his offensive line coach under Andy Reid was Howard Mudd, the guy who was the offensive line coach for the Colts for all those years when Peyton was in Indianapolis, a guy who actually Mike Munchak wanted to hire to be the offensive line coach here, but because of the lockout, ended up the timing didn't work out. He was also going up in practice on defensive line coaches or defensive lines that were coached by Jim Washburn, the longtime defensive lineman here. So there are some kind of tangential AFC South, you know, Tennessee Titans connections with sort of his come up. Now, he has a pretty good rookie season, and then Andy Reid gets fired. Chip Kelly gets brought in. Chip Kelly drafts Lane Johnson with, I believe, the fifth overall pick that next season, and that's an indicator of the kind of offensive lineman that, that Chip Kelly wants. Lane Johnson is like 2 inches shorter and about 20 pounds lighter. He's a much more nimble, fleet foot, you know, lateral movement guy. And I just don't think Dennis Kelly was a good fit for that system pretty much anywhere they put him. But he was good enough to hang on through those years. Now, he lost his third year, I believe, to a back injury. And then last year he comes in and plays kind of spot starts at right guard and right tackle. But, you know, it's never really a complete fit because he's still trying to work in this Chip Kelly system. I think the Titans kind of know a little bit more than most of us, obviously, about what they're getting in Kelly. Not saying that they expect him to be a starter, but I think he immediately becomes our sixth offensive lineman, without a doubt, and that with his pedigree, he can step in, be effective at just about anywhere other than center. And if something should happen to one of our tackles, he can step right in and I think play at a level that's pretty close to either one of them, especially when it comes to run blocking. But, you know, I think he's going to be a much better fit, much more useful in his power scheme than he would have been up there in Philadelphia. You know, it's witness to the fact that Lane Johnson is facing a four-game PED suspension to start out. Kelly, I think, was slated to start at right tackle because of the moves they had to make for that. So, you know, they were willing to give him up to get DDB. I mean, they've got a lot of garbage at the wide receiver position, and they're desperate to sort of turn things around up there. Hopefully this ends up being kind of a win-win for both teams. But don't sleep on Kelly. I mean, the immediate reaction, anytime you trade a skill position player who has some upside for an offensive lineman that isn't a regular in the Pro Bowl or something, people are going to scoff at it and say, you know, that it was a bad move and that the Titans didn't necessarily win it. Looking at, you know, the triage unit we've been running out there for the last half of the past couple seasons at offensive line, I'm happy with the mood. If it's going to make the locker room a little bit better and make that defense or make that offensive line more stout, bigger, stronger, and more competitive in practice, dude, I'm sold.
Well, he definitely has the size to do it, August. And Daniel on the site broke down some film for their the Eagles preseason game the other night, and Kelly played a lot, and it was kind of what you'd expect out of a backup offensive line. It was, you know, he did some things okay and some things not so great, but I think there's a high likelihood that he's still a better player than some of the other offensive line depth, you know. So,
it's one of those moves where I think both teams look at it and say, we feel like we can get more out of your guy than we're going to be able to get out of our guy. And it's just a matter mm-hmm. of scheme and where you're at as a team and all that sort of stuff. And that's why it's so rare to see a one-on-one trade like this in the NFL. Usually there's some draft picks coming one way or the other because one team is especially motivated to get rid of the other person. And that didn't happen here. I think both teams were kind of on a pretty even plane about this. And John Robinson is obviously a guy that NFL GMs are happy to talk to, happy to do deals with, and feel like is treating them the right way. So, it's extremely interesting from sort of all angles.
I think Robinson has a bro in the Eagles front office because they practically gave us DeMarco Murray. And I think it's one of those, you know how kind of some teams will have kind of like a buddy team that they seem to trade with and interact with more? You see it more during the draft, like, hey, you know, if we want to move up, and you're dealing with somebody out of your conference. That way it's not going to hurt you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's no accident that we made the move with St. Louis. When Lake Dawson was the guy who worked for the Titans for like a decade, you know, and was just ingrained here as Fisher was. It was, and I mean, you're right. That dynamic of when GMs build that comfort level with each other, it can be a really good thing for both sides because you end up making equitable trades. You see it all the time in baseball. There's always, you know, like if you're a fan of a baseball team, generally your GM has another team or two that they always seem to trade with. Like for years, it was the Astros and the Tampa Bay Rays. And then the past couple mm-hmm. years, like the Astros, you know, Billy Beane was obviously very, very familiar with Jeff Lunau, the general manager and president of the Astros, and they've swapped players three or four different times because they trust each other and they know nobody's trying to hoodwink each other. And, you know, so look, dude, if we can swap players, swap assets, and they work out for each side, I'm all for that. Because, I mean, that Eagles team was clearly the mismatch was scheme and talent. There was some talent there. The scheme wasn't getting the most out of it. You could say the same thing about the Titans for the past 2 years. We've got some talent. It doesn't all fit the right scheme. So they're both trying to get to the same place on that.
And, like I said, there's probably a high likelihood that either he doesn't see the field much this year or he's not on this roster. And if we just waived him, you run the risk of the Colts or somebody picking him up, right? And there still is that chance, August, that he turns into a decent player. So if he does that in for Philadelphia in the NFC, so be it. It's, you know, if we cut a guy like that and then he ends up in our division, that's a much tougher pill to swallow, at least in my opinion, you know.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, getting him out of the division and out of the conference, I think it certainly makes it more palatable.
Right.
Because, once again, you know, it goes back to the optics of it. The optics of this trade are never going to be great. You know, like I said, you got a young, promising wide receiver for what could be, you know, a lifelong backup along the offensive line in the NFL. But you lessen the harshness of that if it's not thrown in your face constantly, if DGB does end up getting his head straight. And look, maybe this trade is the wake-up call. Who knows? However, if you look at the history of the NFL, wake-up calls very rarely work on guys with that sort of checkered history.
Right. Chris Carter, maybe this is, you know, the Eagles traded Chris Carter, and he ended up getting turned into a Hall of Fame career. This could be payback for that karma. I wouldn't bet on
well,
it. But
I think Chris Carter got Denny Green, and Denny Green for all of his successes and faults was one of the coaches most able to get to a player and kind of rescue a head case. You know, he was what Jeff Fisher thought he was in terms of his ability to take somebody a little bit sketchy and put him on the straight and narrow. So I don't know if DGB is going to find that kind of influence. And who is it? Is it Penderson? Who's the Eagles coach now?
Doug Peterson, the old Brett Favre quarterback.
Yep.
He backed Brett up until they drafted Aaron Rodgers for like a decade, I think, a long time. But he's an Andy Reid kind of guy. He was over there as the offensive coordinator in Kansas City with Andy Reid. So he's probably real familiar with this Dennis Kelly guy. You know, he has – because you said that he was drafted by Reid, right? So there's some ties there. But I think we have a commitment to protect Marcus. And if that means acquiring as many assets for the offensive line as it takes to field a decent unit and then have depth at it, and DGB just happens to be a casualty to that, then I think we're all willing to give it up. He wasn't going to be a starter. And there's also a chance if you have a guy that's not getting the playbook right, that he can be not only a detriment to what we're trying to do on the offense, he could get a guy like our quarterback hurt. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. The best play he had in that preseason game was sealing off a block. Really.
And then when they threw deep to him, he was lazy off the line of scrimmage and missed on the deep ball. So there could be
alligator
part of it. Yeah. Well, he just didn't get off the line good at all. He pretty much ran a crap route. And And that's something that we are, you know, that was supposed to be, okay, if you're not going to be a starting receiver, he should be a big, deep threat where he can get up there, use his body, beat a shorter DB, and if he's not able to do that consistently, then he just doesn't have a place in our top three or four positions in wide receivers. So that's really it. We're enamored with them because there's potential there, but August, I'm so sick of us waiting on people to realize potential that never happens. Let me give you guys a look back at some of our second-round draft picks. Bishop Shankey, we're still waiting on. Justin Hunter, we're still waiting on. Zach Brown is somebody else's problem. We waited on him his whole rookie contract. Akeem Ayers.
Oh, Zach Brown. Zach Brown is starting up in Buffalo because they've had so many injuries and suspensions. I think he's actually slated to be the starting middle linebacker.
Maybe they'll get something out of him. He's got all the physical ability in the world. But it goes back to that whole
potential. He's a Rex Ryan player.
You know?
If he can't revive his career with Rex Ryan, then he was never meant to play in the NFL.
Yeah. He'll be a special teamer or a fan, like me and you, having to watch a game from home. But it's just kind of a theme with us about holding on to guys that never realized their potential. Robinson has no attachment to DGB and thought, you know what, I'm not gonna take up a roster spot on a guy that might turn out to be good. I need people that are good now, and that's why we had a rookie leave him. And if you notice the theme, and we talked about this already, the theme of this draft was guys that were productive in college. Not physical freaks, not the guys with the best combine, guys that did well in college. They produced. There was actual production, not waiting on potential. We got a Derrick Henry who rushed for 2,000 and some yards, won the Heisman. Tajay Sharp led the entire BS in catches last year. You know, it's guys that they had flaws, but they were able to be good football players,
Kevin
and that's
Byard.
What we wanted. Byard, exactly. Yeah, look how he picked
Johnson,
Matt Castle
right
twice
there.
Today.
I mean the biggest sort of the only time we really sort of hit for a home run, and he hasn't gotten to see the field yet, although he's kind of day to day to come off the pup list, is Kevin Dodd. I mean, he was the only kind of 1 year wonder out of our entire pick. Conklin, well, you know, was a starter forever. I mean, you had all the game tape you could ever hope to have on a player in Jack Conklin.
Right. Right, a big program playing in big games. He played in big games with Michigan State against some of the best competition. Dodd with Clemson, same thing.
Well, dude, I will tell you, I want to go to a party that I'm sure this offensive line group is probably going to throw at some point with all these guys from the sort of upper middle part of the country, which I know is where you hail from. I mean, you look at Conklin. Out of Michigan, Taylor Wan, Conklin out of Michigan State, Taylor Wan out of Michigan, Kelly now being, a guy out of Chicago who played at Purdue. They seem to like these big, salty, kind of Big Ten, whatever. I can't even remember all the college divisions now, but, those cold weather,
and they're
big,
growing.
Salty, run-based teams.
Yeah, oh, and the Big Ten, and they're growing, Now the Big Ten has, they're like 12 teams out of their – it's hard to keep up with. You really gotta pay attention to it. But
that kind of heartland, corn-fed area of the country, and then throw it in the mix, Chance and what he did at Alabama and all that sort of stuff. But there's a definite trend they're going for with these offensive linemen, and it ain't just white.
Although that certainly appears
to be part of it.
If you want an offensive lineman, either pull them off a farm or pull them from a place that's cold as shit. Because you get the big corn-fed guys that way,
Hell yeah! They're either working on a farm or in a factory. Yeah, I think you'd say that for just about everywhere these guys came from. That's kind of the area. That's the background of the area. So I think he's going to fit right in. I think he's going to be a really, really good fit for us. And we also are still number one on the waiver wire. They're going to be able to find probably one or two guys who can come in and add quality depth. Have not pushed for a starting spot once cuts start getting made. And look, we needed the depth. I forgot the name of the kid that retired, but Byron Bell is injured. I mean, you saw when we were out there playing the Chargers on Saturday, Quentin Spain had to move over to left tackle with a second unit when they came out because that's how thin we are at tackle.
Right, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
Oh, hell yeah, for a team that hasn't been able to keep offensive linemen healthy the past couple years. I mean, they've had to run Wolf Fitek and guys of that caliber out there. It would be nice to have somebody coming off the bench who you were pretty sure wasn't going to be a disaster.
Well, I would rather guys come off the bench, August, that was in training camp with us and not in street clothes,
Yep, for sure.
So, I hope Kelly doesn't have to play.
Yeah. But, I mean, he gives them that veteran depth, and it's the move the same way drafting Jack Conklin was. Yes, he fit the need for this team. It's going to be good for us. It's going to fit what we're going to do. But it's all, you said, Amy Adams Trunk has delivered an edict of we're going to protect Marcus Mariota, and we are going to keep him healthy. Well, you need 6, 7, 8 really quality offensive linemen if you're going to do that. And now that's what they're able to boast, especially, you know, if they can help out a little bit more. They don't have to rely on a rookie to come in and surprise everybody.
Right. Right.
But the trade surprised me. I honestly thought if we were going to trade anybody for anything, it would be Bishop Saint. Or maybe a defensive lineman to the Cowboys to try to get some of their offensive line depth. So I really give credit to Dan for calling that he's going to be cut or traded is what he read in the tea leaves, which I kind of thought, I don't see that. There's back to too much potential. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Second round draft pick with potential. So, but it's done with. I'd seen they already gave Tajay Sharpe his locker, pulled him away from the rookie corner and gave him DGB's locker. So that happened rather
nice.
Quickly.
Also worth noting, Trey McBride was running with the ones. Now that he's going to take over that spot, but it shows you once again, I think there are some guys who don't fit the fan profile or the fantasy football profile that'll get you real excited in this wide receiving group who I think they expect to make some contributions.
But, you know, we've been a bad team and we're in love with potential. That's been our running theme, and it just hasn't worked out for it. DGB had some good moments last year, but if you just get down to the brass tacks, his production would be easily replaced. Now, do you project that he turns into a Terrell Owens? You just can't bet on it. You know, you just can't. We've been burned before. So, but he's an Eagle now. We got a new member of the team. Hopefully, Kelly sticks. I was trying to find some contract info. I found where he just signed a 1-year contract with the Eagles, but then when I pulled up the SportTrack website, it's got him playing for us for this season for $760,000 and next season for $880,000. So I don't know if we if it was like signed for an extra year or
it might have been like an extension on whatever deal. Like he probably wasn't even on a rookie deal, being a fifth round pick.
No, his rookie deal.
So there might be a club option with it, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's nothing, you know, like a $30,000 workout bonus. There's zero of it guaranteed. So we're not necessarily married to the guy, but I hope he does amount to something.
Hey, and you know what he should be? Motivated. Because he's at that turning point right now where he's either going to establish himself as a guy who has a 7 or 8 year NFL career, or a guy who's, you know, on his way out after you get a trade like this. So,
yeah, a backup lineman in the NFL for $1 million a year is what was that?
Are they going to keep paying you if you're not producing? I mean, there's always another guy who can come out and take your spot. And B, you know, this offensive line needed a complete overhaul, and you got to look at it at this point and say that's exactly what's happened over the past season and a half. I mean, you know, Quentin Spain's in there. Taylor Lewan, they've redefined what they want him to do, and he seems to be reacting pretty well to it. You know, Chance Warmack, the offensive line coach, Ben Jones, drafting the rookie right tackle and changing out a lot of depth behind them. They've completely flipped that skill group, or, you know, that position group outside of Chance Warmack from what it was 2 or 3 years ago.
And I liked what we did with keeping our presumptive starting five in a little longer. Let them gel. Let them get out there. It paid dividends. I like seeing Henry run behind it. And realistically, maybe on Saturday when we play Carolina, we'll have Kelly to see how he looks at tackle and not have Quentin Spain with be out there any longer than he needs to, you know, because if he's going to be our starting guard, I don't want him to get hurt playing second string tackle during a preseason game.
Yeah, but I think those guys need some confidence and they need some success. They need a couple of games of walking back into the locker room like, we just put that defensive line in a camel clutch. I mean, we made them say, uncle, you know, we did exactly what we wanted to do. They need that kind of confidence, because if you're going to be a run-blocking group, a big physical road-grading group in this NFL, you got to believe you're one of the baddest dudes walking the earth, period.
Yeah, yeah. And that's who I want on the team.
Exactly. It has become my favorite phrase. I've dropped it so often in conversation. You said it about Derrick Henry. I think these offensive linemen would like it to be said about them, that when they release a block and get up on the second level, some of those guys, some of those little linebackers, some of those safeties playing up in the box are going to make a business decision about how much they want to take on, you know, Quentin Spain or Jack Conklin or Taylor Lewan.
Yeah, yeah. Or a 6'8 guy like Kelly. That's a big dude.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, guys like that. I mean, it's a whole different animal. So if we're not going to be, you don't have to be a super, you know, we're not looking for the Colts offensive line for this team anymore. We're not trying to have a quarterback who throws 500 times a season. You know, this team is supposed to be built to win without our quarterback having to throw 40 touchdowns. If we get that, that's nice, but that shouldn't be the way we have to win games. And this is the kind of offensive line you need.
Right. Well, let's segue towards the Panthers game, the next one on Saturday. And that is going to be a really good test for our offensive line. I was trying to do a little research on how Carolina played their starters for the last preseason game, and they kept them in for about a series. So I think we'll see a little more than that. And they had a pretty good series. I think it was a 14-play drive. Cam threw about 5 passes. He didn't run with the ball any. But this starting 7, August, we'll know a lot about what our offensive line can do. Let me read you this depth chart. Charles Johnson, Star Latulele, Kawan Short, Coney Ealy. That's their down line. Then Shaq Thompson, Luke Kuechly, and Thomas Davis as the linebackers. So this will be a good test. I'm excited to see what our offensive line is able to do, and I think we'll know a lot more about how we're going to match up with a stouter defense like the Vikings week 1. I think of the preseason matchup, even though that it's probably going to be maybe 2 or 3 series at most for this game, this will probably be our best preseason game to kind of be able to project out to what the offensive line is going to do.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be a good test going up a team that won, 15 games last year and went to the Super Bowl and was not that far away from winning. That game was not a blowout.
No.
A couple of things that I will guarantee you are gonna happen in this game. Number one, prior to this game, Dick LeBeau and Mike Mularkey, I'm sure, are going to make sure the defense watches that tape of the Panthers game here last year where Cam Newton absolutely annihilated us and was in the third or fourth quarter, you know, doing dabs down in the touchdown or after a touchdown in the end zone. And a couple of the Titans' defensive players didn't like it. And the NFL world responded pretty appropriately, saying, look, if you don't like him doing it, don't let him score a touchdown. Message being, don't let this dude score a touchdown, period. I think they should have a little bit of grudge against this team. Not saying they're going to, like, come out and hurt anything, but this needs to be the best defensive performance by that group this preseason. I think they have a little pride on the line, even though it's, the preseason. Even though Cam Newton's probably only going to play a series, if I'm Ron Rivera, I don't let him play more than a series, no more than 5 or 6 snaps probably, to kind of get him out of there. But this defense should take this thing pretty seriously because it wasn't just an embarrassing loss in the way it happened, but they made it worse by, half-ass challenging him in the end zone. And it was probably one of the more humiliating losses the Titans had. And certainly one of the few ones you can look back and say, that was a lot on the defense.
Well, I know one defender that took issue with the celebration was Avery Williamson because Cam was in the middle of his second verse of dancing in front of Avery, and that was when we had the little scrum in the end zone. So I don't have any ill will towards Cam, but I would like to see maybe we got a blitz or two for Avery to send him after him a little bit, just to let him know that we remember.
Yeah, just as something that's like, hey, dude, we're not going to let this guy beat us. I know it's the preseason, but once again, the preseason can tell you a lot, or it can be very effective for a team that has no confidence, that is really trying to reshape its culture and build some confidence moving forward. Now, they can't rest on their laurels, obviously, of what happens in the preseason, but this is the rare preseason where I think this Titans team needs to show out well in the first half.
And we'll get to see your boy Vernon Butler that you were so enamored with, and maybe even see him match up against our new offensive lineman, Dennis Kelly. So we'll have a couple little subplots to pay attention to. That's what I like about the preseason, is after the starters are off there, you're kind of looking for the games within the game.
I know, man. I'm just scared of them putting Vernon Butler over the nose spot, and all of a sudden Andy Gallick or Brian Schwenke's got to be the guy to guard him after Ben Jones comes out, because that would be an absolute horror show, in my opinion. I'll be really interested to see how they use him, because I was pretty convinced that his best spot in the NFL was going to be along the front of a 3-4 defense, and that's not what they run there. Did they think he's going to be a great all-around player? Or do they really get him as just a run-stopping specialist? We're not going to see that for how he's used now, but I think we're going to see a little bit of if he's capable of being the all-around player that, you know, they probably hope he's going to be.
Well, what I'm interested in seeing is how our offensive line holds up, if our running game stays productive, and, you know, they lost the cornerback. What was the – Josh Norman. And they went Vernon Butler, corner in the draft. So there's going to be a lot of rookie corners out there. I'd like to see us get some reps in with these wide receivers and the passing game. So I'd like to see Marcus throw maybe 7, 8, 10 passes, assuming the offensive line's holding up well. And I think that'll be a fun little matchup. What about you, August? You got any notes or maybe any predictions, maybe not a score, but something that you're looking for or expecting out of the team?
Well, I got a question for you philosophically. One of the big sticking points as far as the conversation around this team over the course of the offseason has been the usage of Marcus Mariota, especially Hal Malarkey's going to use him. For some reason, the national media has really been sold on the fact that he's going to treat him like he's Matt Ryan, who is his quarterback in Atlanta, or, you know, some of the more statuesque pocket passers that he's had, not realizing that Malarkey has his back history with, Cordell Stewart and you know, the stuff he did with the Steelers.
Antoine Randall L.
Antoine Randall L. Hines Ward, like, you know, converted wide receivers, but also, like, athletic quarterbacks you can use in different ways. The Titans be running Mariota in the preseason? You want him to get the reps, but is it worth exposing him to the injury?
I'm going to say it's not. Marcus is a natural runner. I think when he gets turned loose, he's fine. He's good at protecting himself on the run. Most of the time when he really got lit up, it was him looking to pass and staying in the pocket too long. So, but I don't think I'd do it. I'd be surprised if they did. Just in that weird off chance. And I don't think they want to put anything on tape about any ideas we have. You know, I'd seen the other day that they ran a couple triple option plays in during practice with Murray and Henry. So that'll be fun to watch. But let's leave that for the Vikings. How about you? What's your thought on it?
I mean, my thought, I think, is that you have to call a couple designed runs in this preseason where there's, you know, wide bullets, guys are actually trying to hit you hard, things are going outside, because I'm not as much interested on if he keeps his eyes downfield. I'm not as much interested on if he has the speed or the athletic ability. He's got to prove to me that, like you said, he's going to be smart. He's going to know when to go out of bounds, know when to go down, know how to protect the ball when he's making guys miss, all that sort of stuff. Because you need to prove, I think, to this coaching staff that you will do that stuff before they should be designing runs for you during the course of the game. You know, basically, like, prove to me that you're responsible enough to handle this before we start handing you the ball when it really matters.
Well, he did well with it last year during when the games mattered. So I would argue that there's enough tape and enough on his resume when he's decided, you know, when he's running with the football that they, that it, I don't think it's imperative to do it during the preseason. And I still think it's just one of those. Here's the thing.
I'll say if, also, this ain't the defense to do that on.
Right. And don't we have the Raiders next week? And then the fourth preseason, he's only going to, like, sniff the field, if anything. Or is the Raiders
a lot of times
the fourth game?
I'm sorry. I didn't, like, I've been out of the mode enough. Isn't it usually the third game that the quarterback, like, your starting quarterback doesn't play that often, and then the fourth preseason game, they – or is it the other way around?
Yeah, it's kind of shifted in the past. It used to be that the fourth preseason was – the longer one. Now it's the third preseason game that you are going to have your starters play into the second half. The fourth preseason game, all they're trying to do is get reps and solidify the back end of the roster, because immediately after that you have to get down to your 53. So the third preseason game is the closest to a game in the preseason, and I pulled it up. It is our Oakland game. So with the emphasis, August, on us protecting Marcus, I think that they're not going to risk it. I think I really don't. Now, they might, you know, Marcus might take off and run. I think they've been adamant about, like, no, we're not trying to rein him in. But I don't know if we'll see, like, a zone read or an option play. I did like the little fake toss handoff thing they did to Henry, and then he kind of gave Murray the behind-the-back kind of Statue of Liberty looking handoff. So I could see
him doing
something kind of interesting.
Play,
yeah.
Well,
but no, I'm not running the quarterback.
And I mean, honestly, that kind of Statue of Liberty play was the sort of thing that Mularkey is talking about when he says exotic smash mouth. That it's 80% of the play calls will be get the first down, you know, keep time in possession, keep things moving forward, keep things going well. But then you throw in trick plays. Part of the exotic part, what he did with the Steelers and what he did sometimes with Atlanta, were sort of trick plays that would throw a team off, because you've got them worried about the point of attack, worried about the rushing game, worried about everything going forward. If you really look at plays like the Statue of Liberty, other stuff like that, they're kind of play action or play deception play calls. I think that's I think he's been pretty clear early on, at least, that that's what he was talking about with the exotic smash mouth. It's not just play action, drop back, and throw the ball down the field. It's use the fact that the defense is tired and the defense is so worried about the point of attack and the running game and, you know, the fact that we keep grinding out first downs with these possession receivers, that when you throw something else into the mix, they can't react to it the right way.
Right. And so much of play calling, so often – can you just be sitting there at home watching the game and thinking, why in the hell did they call that play? It got 1 yard or whatever. And it really could be just the whole point is to just set something up later on. It's kind of like
the next time
boxer jabbing just to set up a knockout blow. And that's what I like about some of the trickeration or the zone read plays with Marcus. Go ahead and do that a couple times in the first quarter. Make them worry about it all game. Whether you never go back to – if they got to put a spy on Marcus, then that's just one less guy. You know, even if they have eight in the box, if one guy is a spy, then we're still running against seven-man fronts. And Marcus is going to be able to read and identify that and check us into better running plays, and we're going to have a more talented offensive line with infinitely more talented running backs and better depth behind it.
Well, your boxing analogy right there was almost perfect. It's to essentially, you could be, a lot of NFL teams are trying to be Mike Tyson, come out throwing punches, you know, haymakers all the time. They want to knock you out in the first or second quarter and let their defense kind of take over. Whereas the Titans are going for much more of a Floyd Mayweather, jab, 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 jab. Sit there. You might win by a technical. You might win by the slightest of margins at the end of it. But he's playing the efficient game that is going to end up getting you more wins than we've been able to get over the past few seasons, even if it's not the knockout blows that you need to be an elite team.
Absolutely. And it's going to – we're going to have a move-the-change type offense, and we still have some explosive guys on there. We've seen Marcus take off for 87 yards. You know Delaney is going to be – check this out. Delaney, now everybody's like, are you worried about the emphasis on the run game? Delaney was saying, well, look, if our run game's going well, what's going to happen to those linebackers and those safeties? They're going to have to come closer to the line of scrimmage. And you know where Delaney's going to be? He's going to get behind them. And then you get a guy this offense is going to be predicated on getting our best players in a one-on-one matchup. We saw that the other night with Murray and the 71-yard. Everybody locked their guy up, and there's one defender. Murray made him look like a fool and was gone. We'll be able to have matchups like that for Delaney's a mismatch still, you know, even without all his knuckles, August.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Delaney's an absolute mismatch. He's a nine-knuckle wonder. He's easily one of the top three tight ends in the NFL. Anybody that puts some of these other young guys that they're talking about over him are basically guys who are more worried about fantasy football than actual football. They don't care if a guy can block. They don't care if a guy can, you know, be an honest third-down reception choice. They'd rather see a guy who gets, you know, a 20-yard reception, you know, maybe once every 3 weeks. That's not what Delaney Walker is, but he can be that and be the guy who does everything else perfectly. And you're right, dude. That's the whole point. You grind the ball, you worry about the point of attack, everybody sort of sucks in, and then you take advantage of that space that's behind them. And Mariota is the perfect guy to work that short passing scheme, efficiency, grinding the ball, so he doesn't have to be the best deep ball thrower in the NFL. Clearly, it was not one of his strong points last season. I think he's going to get better as he goes forward, but he's never going to be an elite down-the-field passer. But if you can work everything else like clockwork and then mix in a couple of deep throws, big throws, then that's a really good offensive philosophy. And like you pointed out several times, that's what Denver, Seattle, Carolina, several other really successful teams, some of the biggest teams in the league right now, that's what they do.
Yeah. And everybody's so worried about us, like, turning back the clock and going to some ancient offense when this philosophy is winning Super Bowls now, right now, and has been, you know. And it's not like we're going to run it 80% of the time. Well, we might be a little below the league average, which was 63% last year, I think. So we're going to run it probably 50% of the time. That's still 50. Marcus is still going to end up throwing it 25 times most games. I really believe that. And he'll probably have a few carries, and then we'll have a split between the running backs. So it's... people act like we're just going to hand the ball off all game, you know, and that's not the case. We're gonna milk the clock. We're gonna have lower scoring games, and Marcus is going to be fine. And Marcus actually being around maybe a winning culture will be awesome. You know, that's my view on it.
Absolutely. I think it's a scheme and a culture and a game plan that is going to be successful for this team, you know, moving forward. And they have such incredible flexibility with their draft picks and with the cap moving forward that they're only going to, you know, kind of be able to help that cause.
I will say this, Hogan. I think Marcus throws for more than 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns this year, probably closer to 30 touchdowns. He did 19. Everybody said, oh, gosh, you know, Malarkey's so awful. He coached Marcus for some really good games. Look at what we did with the Saints. You know, of course, the Saints crap defense. I know, but you know, Malarkey liked letting Marcus throw the ball when we were in the red zone. He really trusted him. So let's use the running backs to get us in the red zone.
Yeah,
and take some of the hits off Marcus.
Yep, exactly. And take some of the pressure off him, not have him make a decision every time he comes to the line. But if he throws for that many yards and for that many touchdowns, it's going to be because he walks up to the line and finds himself in some optimal situations. Excuse me. Optimal situations and opts into a pass play. And you don't need the biggest threat in the world like a DGB or a Justin Hunter to execute plays when you've got the tactical advantage on your side. So I think that's what they're building this team around, and I think that's the trade that happened today makes sense to me in that way. The guy they brought in makes a lot more sense for this team and this culture than the guy they shipped out.
To your point, we're going to have – if we force defenses to commit more defenders to stopping the run, we just saw it against the Chargers. They couldn't stop the run. They bring a guy down, and then we throw – Marcus actually threw a good – I think it was Marcus – to DGB, who didn't get off the line, but he had one-on-one coverage and got – could – if he had a better release, he would have been behind the defense.
That's what DGB is supposed to do, though. Like, DGB is supposed to be the guy that if he gets one-on-one and you don't have the safety help and he's just got to beat a guy down the field, you just take the height, you hold the ball for 2 seconds, pat it, and then throw. Period.
Right.
DGB is not that guy right now. So if you're not going to be that guy, let's not call that play for you. Let's get you out of here, and we'll put somebody in there who's going to fight for it a little harder, or who we're not going to expect so much from.
And I think that even Tajay Sharpe, a guy that can run good routes and understands the offense and the defense, every receiver has an option route. Every single one of them. This is the trouble about a guy that gets behind in the playbook, as you know all this. Every guy comes up to the line, and he has to read the defense. And he has to read it in the same way that the quarterback does.
The quarterback does.
Now, you got a guy that's, Tajay Sharpe could have a career arc. Not that I'm comparing them, but a guy like our quarterback would be better off with a guy like Antonio Brown, who runs the best routes in the league. He's not the fastest guy. He's quick, but he's got good hands. He understands where he needs to be, and he's catching 130, 140 passes every year. So you have if our guys on the outside and then Kendall are understanding, okay, this defense is committed to an eighth defender in the box, or maybe even a ninth. I mean, he's going to have some shots down the field, and I think we will have some big plays. I don't think it's all going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust. The 3 yards in a cloud of dust is going to set up some quick strike opportunities, and I think we'll see it pretty quick. I'm cautious about Minnesota because Minnesota's a hell of a defense and they're really well coached, but I am not really that sold on their offense. I think our defense would be able to give them a tough time. So I'm not willing to roll over and say that the Vikings is just going to beat the crap out of us. And there's people saying the Vikings are a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I kind of understand where they're coming from. However, I, as I'm sure all Titan fans, will not be that heartbroken if we lose week one. Because if we've learned anything over the past 2 years, week one don't mean bleep.
Right. Right. So, all right, August. Well, let's. There's a few things about training camp today, or the past couple days, I thought were interesting. Just wanted to run it down real quick. And afterwards, if there's anything you want to comment on, and I'll let you lead us out of this. So, I'd seen that. Bleedy Ray Wilson is getting work at safety. My gut instinct is maybe they're trying to find a spot on the roster for him, and he's probably getting further and further away from the cornerback depth. The North Searcy seems to really have Damian Stafford.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Hang on. Let me get my, you give your training camp note, and I'll get my hot take. Okay?
Okay.
So my
go
hot
ahead.
Take, Bleedy Ray Wilson. Bleedy Ray Wilson can prepare for a safety job all he wants. He needs to be prepared to bag some groceries here in a couple weeks because there's absolutely no way I think he makes the final 53.
Damian Stafford is hot on Denoris Searcy's heels, but it looked like Denoris got the bulk of first-team reps today. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that Norris Harris is going to start that spot. I'm glad to see Stafford showing out well, and the defensive group kind of giving him some opportunities. But, you know, I think he's a lock to make the roster, but he's not going to unseat either one of those safeties. Kevin Byer is clearly the number three safety.
Sure. And speaking of him, I'd mentioned earlier he picked Castle off twice today. I know that's not necessarily a prize, but the guy is showing why he had so many picks in college. August?
Kevin Byer is going to lead this team in interceptions over the course of the season. I don't know how many starts he's going to get. I don't know when it's going to be that he unseats one of these other guys, but if he's healthy, I will guarantee you, book it, he is going to lead this team in an interception. And we're going to forget all about who Michael Griffin was for this team after about week one when he comes back here with Minnesota.
Kendall Wright and still hasn't practiced. Neither and Parrish Cox, I think, has been out for a little bit. Dodd didn't practice today, but I seen they removed him from the pup. I tweeted him and didn't get a response, but he's not a real active Twitter guy. And I was just trying to find out if he was playing Saturday, but maybe he didn't know, or maybe you just didn't see it. Any thoughts on the guys that are sitting out?
Really seems that Kendall Wright's not able to get back in, but I think his roster spot is pretty safe, even though they're giving him a hard time. Dodd is just such a wait and see. I mean, until he's out there, you know, they keep saying he's day to day to come off the pup list. You know, that the surgical procedure was preemptive. That, you know, this is not going to be a big deal, but the further he gets from actually being out on the field, I mean, it's just hard for me to buy in until I see something. So it's definitely a wait and see spot with him. However, I think he's going to end up being okay, and I think he by the probably about the middle of the season, you'll start seeing a lot more of him. I think the time he's missed now is going to affect him the first six games more than it will the last six games. Who knows what happens in the middle.
And I think he'll be a guy that is just into pass rush on relief for the first handful of games that he played. And our owner, Amy Adams-Strunk, was at practice again. I think she's made the bulk of them, if not all of them, which I still think is a feather in her cap. And that's all I've had so far, August.
Hell yeah. I mean, I really love to see that. And I don't know if that product of all the pressure the NFL put on for her to be more present locally, whatever. I mean, Jimmy Johnson's out at every Cowboys practice. I don't think that helps anybody do anything. However, I think it sort of fits the culture change that they're really investing in more with the upgrade to the facilities. Your owner's out there every day. She's the clear, you know, managing owner. You have a new GM who is not afraid to make deals, not afraid to make deals that don't have the best optics necessarily. I mean, the Titans preseason for this first week and the training camp period really couldn't have gone much better. The only thing that would have made it better was if DGB came in and tip-top shape with the mental focus of a Jerry Rice. Outside of that, I think everything's going really well right now.
Absolutely. So, that's all I had, August. Why don't you take us out of here?
All right, man. Thank you to everybody for listening to the show. We'll be back this weekend with another live episode to sort of recap what happens with the Panthers. And you can find the show on Facebook at Facebook Titans MCM Radio. You can find me on Twitter at AugustWest_MCM. You can find Dan on Twitter at DanOmikeTN and tweet him some props for calling the ZGB stuff in the last episode. You can find Brandon on Twitter at DrunkAsDrew. And anybody that wants to contribute to the show, we're trying to do a little more like online promotion, you know, buying some ad spots, doing some different things to help grow this show, because we really feel like the Titans are on the verge of something really good. And there's been a ton of you that have stuck in forever and are, you know, we absolutely love you. But for new people, for old folks, whoever you are, if you go to our Facebook page, Facebook Titans MCM Radio, there is a PayPal link if you want to donate to the show. All profits, everything we get, will go to helping spread the word about this show to other people, to maybe get us a little better equipment so we can get you better sound quality, that sort of stuff. It's, you know, we don't get anything off of this. We do it absolutely for the love. So if you want to check that out, we would absolutely love it. If not, man, just keep on listening, and that's all we ask. And tell a buddy. There you go. That's all you got to do. So for Brandon, this is August West saying thank you very much for listening, and Titan, let's go with the show.